This week on Potlatch, David Smart of Hooper Bay, Phil Kelly of Egigik, and Ron Minook of Anchorage talk during a visit during university days. Also, a report by Donna John of Stevens Village, and parts of a lecture by Dr. Walter Sobolov on Tlingit history and culture. Potlatch, a program about Alaska Natives for Alaska Natives. Here now, parts of an interview I had very recently with David Smart of Hooper Bay, Ron Minook of Anchorage, and Phil Kelly of Egigik.
I was just asked to come up here with 40 Anchorage students from all over the high schools in Anchorage to chaperone them and help them come up. And I helped set up some of the projects we're going to be doing up here.
What is the purpose, what is the rationale for bringing people up here from Anchorage and from other parts of the state?
I guess to help them show them the university, show them what's going on in the university and that up here.
David Smart, what is going on here at the university?
Students are getting to know, you know, what's going on, you know, getting to know some classes, you know, pool tables and swimming pools and all that.
Phil Kelly, where are you working now?
I work for the Anchorage Borough School District Indian Education Act. I have a community counseling section. I have 5 counselors that work for me. And we work with all the Alaska Native students in the Anchorage Borough School District, which number about 2,600. And we have, I volunteered as the chaperone for this trip up here. And we'll be here today and we'll be going back tomorrow, an 8-hour bus ride. And I thought I'd bring them down here and have them tour the station, because I graduated from here in 1969 with a degree in broadcasting. And it's changed since I went through here. Back then, all the television instruction and so forth was just theory. We never did have a TV station, whatever. We had a radio station. And I can see some of the old editor and some of the old stuff that is still here. But I'd like to come back sometime and just sort of hang around and probably get a little more experience in the television aspect of it.
I asked Phil Kelly which high school setting, rural school, regional high school, or boarding home in large city, best serves Alaska Natives.
The state should give students the option whether they should stay close to their home areas and regions or whether they want to go into a large metropolitan setting. Now, I think that before they do that, I would like to see some exchange of videotape. In fact, we've had several requests from villages into the Anchorage Borough School District asking us, can you send us a videotape, since we have this videotape machine out here provided by state-operated schools, can you send us a videotape of what a normal school day would be like in this junior high school or whatever, and what's a normal day in Anchorage like, the lifestyle of the city, so that we can show it to our kids and to see if they'd like to try that. Now I can see an exchange of videotape of that sort. And also to help instructors and principals and nurses to understand our lifestyle in the village, there can be an exchange of videotape on the lifestyle of our people in the village so that people in the city can understand it. I've talked to many principals, teachers, nurses, and counselors on our lifestyle. They ask questions like, well, how come we're so quiet or silent, whatever. We're not aggressive. We don't volunteer or raise hands and so forth. Well, the difference there is that within this society, in the metropolitan society, you're encouraged academically to be aggressive, raising of hands, volunteering, answering questions. But within our society, to be aggressive is to be belligerent, and to be belligerent is to be rude. So If a student has just come from the bush to come into the city and all of a sudden he's being hassled by the teacher saying, well, be more aggressive, you know, it's just almost completely against his grain. And to be loud in some instances is to be insecure in our eyes. And so we come into this environment and we see people running all over the place in a hurry, it seems to us, because we don't like to hurry and waste that much energy if we don't have to. And then we see them talking too much. It's kind of, in some, as I was saying before, a 180-degree change in lifestyle. And in the city, you're guilty until proven innocent. You're guilty of walking into a bar until you can prove that you're old enough to do that. You're guilty of driving without a license until you can prove that you have a license. You're even guilty of trying to help somebody, a stranger, say, if I went up to you and I didn't know you and I said, okay, I'll give you a hand with all that stuff you have to carry. And you look at me and say, how come? Why? Suspicion, whatever. But within the village, you're innocent until proven guilty. The people accept you for who you are until otherwise. And this is the extremes in lifestyles. And I can see where, going back to the original question, I can see where certain characteristical traits of students, whatever, if they want to stay close to the village, like in Bethel, they can fly back to Huber Bay or fly back to Chivac. Well, that's fine. Bethel is sort of in what you might call a semi-metropolitan area, and Anchorage is complete. The change is different, and so I would give the students an option because I can see benefits in both sides.
I have heard of a place called CT, and I'm going to see it just how it is. Leaving my home, a simple life goodbye, but I'll come back home. I'm lost in the city, oh, 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 I'm lost in the city. Amazing city, I found it to be, and the skies are full of streets are full of many people and people I don't know. I'm lost in the city, oh, 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 I'm lost in the city. And I met a girl on the streets, and every street was her home. She kept me going to something new. And when I ran out of money, she said, goodbye, honey. I'm lost in the city, oh, 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 I'm lost in the city. Oh, oh, oh.
John Ungayak. We'll hear from Donna John of Stevens Village after this message.
Fire is a problem shared by every community. That's why everyone should give some thought to what action to take if fire suddenly strikes. Underwriter Laboratories, the fire safety people, believe that knowing how to operate a fire extinguisher could be a decisive factor in dealing with minor fires. Underwriter Labs explains that the Type A extinguisher is designed for wood, paper, cloth, rubber, and some plastics that may serve as fuel for fire. The type BC extinguisher is one designed to snuff out fires caused by flammable liquids, greases, or gases, as well as those created by electrical equipment that is still energized. And UL points out that the multi-purpose fire extinguisher can be used on all these kinds of fire. Remember that most extinguishers require a pin to be pulled before they will operate, and that the nozzle should be pointed at the base of a fire's flames. UL hopes you will know what to do when the fire strikes. Sometime in your life, you may need to know.
I'm Donna John from the Dinya Corporation, Stevens Village, Alaska. I and 15 other representatives have completed a village corporation management course. The Tenant Chiefs Conference and CETA sponsored a 10-week training course to enhance our knowledge of business administration, corporation management, realty, grant writing, accounting, taxes, Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, and taught us the Bureau of Land Management and Bureau of Indian Affairs operations. We had the opportunity to have instructors from DOYON, the Alaska Federation of Natives, Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Bureau of Land Management, the state, attend the Chiefs Conference Community College, and the Fairbanks Realtors and Surveyors. Here are a few comments from my friends and classmates. This one is from Mando Cha, Village Corporation, Hilly Lake. My opinion on the CETA programs taken were all right, except some subjects were given too fast and I hardly took any notes. Otherwise, it was very interesting in all subjects. Much obliged to Tenna Chiefs Conference, Joe Beaver, Vice President. President Ed Hamilton of Sase Corporation, Chegluk, said that the classes were really good for corporation uses. Only thing wrong, in my own opinion, is that they tried to put too much of everything into us in such a short while. Everything they had really helped me, and I think everyone else. President Lincoln Byfield of the Ben Goza Corporation, Huslia, said that in comparing the two management courses that I've attended, the first 9 weeks course in the fall of 1973 was sponsored by DOYON and the second by both Tenna Chiefs Conference and CETA. By comparison, the first management was planned far better and better instructors and student attendance. The second course being fair attendance. However, this year's courses were better as far as being practical for corporation uses. I would recommend for future courses being of a week or two in one specific course and held in sub-regional areas with instructors planned in advance for a subject in conjunction with corporation needs. This is the same feelings expressed by President Homer Tobuk of Evansville Corporation, Evansville, Alaska. In my opinion, I hope a lot more people from the villages will take advantage of this program when it is offered to their villages. There will be one in the fall. I've gained more insight to the problems we natives will be encountering in the future with the state, the government, our own corporation, and the regional corporation. The struggle for our village corporation to survive is here now, and all we need is the knowledge to contend with it. And this is a comment from Terry Burnett, the CETA program director. All the corporations are being surveyed for kinds of projects they will be undertaking and the training needed. The future training projects will be based on responses from the sub-regional and village corporations. It will involve a lot more people and increase effectiveness of the training. And the training will be located in the villages, so the managers or the students participating will not have to leave their village or their family in order to take part in this project. Thank you, Donna John.
Michael Murphy, singing about the Medicine Man. Our thanks this week go to KICY, Nome, Alaska, for carrying potlatch. A few weeks ago, we heard a lecture by Dr. Walter Soboloff on Tlingit history and culture, and we'll hear that after we tell you that he had to compete during that speech with a couple of squalling babies. We'll hear Dr. Soboloff's speech after this message.
If you're planning a budget, knowing how long an appliance will last is very important. That's why the economists of the U.S. Department of Agriculture did a study on the life expectancies of household appliances. Some of the results indicate that families keep a new home freezer an average of 20 years, and a new refrigerator, 15 years. The average service life expectancies for other new appliances are, for a gas range, 13 years, an electric range, 12 years. A dishwasher lasts 11 years, a washing machine, 11 years. An electric clothes dryer, 14 years, while a gas clothes dryer lasts 13 years. A black and white TV set is expected to last 11 years and 12 years for a color TV set. These figures show how long, on the average, households keep each appliance, not how long the appliance could have been made to last. If you buy used appliances, the average service life expectancies are as follows. For a used home freezer, 9 years. A used refrigerator, 7 years. A gas range, 7 years. An electric range, 6 years. A dishwasher that's been used should last 7 years, and a washing machine, 5 years. An electric clothes dryer, 5 years, and a black and white TV set should be 5 years. There is no data for figuring the service life expectancy of used color TV sets, and the owners of stolen color TV sets didn't step forward to be surveyed.
Art forms were owned by the tribe and the clan. A member of the Raven tribe or Eagle tribe would hire an opposite clansman or tribesman to make his emblem. For an example, I belong to the Raven tribe. It's not my privilege to make my own emblem, the Raven or the clan, under that group. It is customary to hire a member of the Eagle tribe. In either case, they were paid during ceremonials. The first payment, let's say he made a ceremonial dancing hat, and we would put a price on maybe $200. That's the first payment. The second payment would be a banquet and speech making and dancing. You have three prices. What then would be the price of a Thingit memorial hat or shakia? Oh, $1,400 or $1,500. As in the years gone by, our art was expressed in wood, in painting, in basket weaving, spruce root, and red cedar bark. The nakhen, a rope such as this, made from mountain sheep wool. The predominant colors, as you know, green, red, and black. And later, another art form developed in the metals. Copper, gold, silver, and also beads. An artist's work appeared on wooden spoons, halibut hooks, ceremonial costumes, totem poles, tattoo on the wrists, rock work or petroglyphs. For having lived close to the world of nature, the Thingit Indians, the Haidas, and the Tsimsheans learn to appreciate its beauty and strength, and adopted into their art forms their grace, strength, and color. There was a belief that all the world of nature spoke to them, and they heard the world of nature speaking. And they believed that the world of nature could see each individual too. And they could hear the persons. A story is told that the Malagas, which is known to many of you, that this rather beautiful bird, adopted a piece of wood in a lake or a river as his partner. And as he lands in the river or the pond or wherever it may be, he always looks for this piece of beaten wood. Sometimes it could be driftwood. And this became his partner. We call it a shock. And the shock or stick seems to have liked him very well. So shock always spoke to the Malaga, telling him little stories and bits of humor. And every now and then, the Malaga would start laughing in the river near him. And to this day, that piece of stick is still telling jokes to the Malaga. The peoples of Southeast Alaska felt that respect for one another was necessary to preserve their heritage. Thus, if war or discord, disagreement arose, the council met to promote and to have peace through ceremony. Basically, a raven had to live at peace with the eagle, and the eagle lived at peace with the raven. A misconduct on his part involved his clan. This is one person making a mistake. It is during such times that land, songs, dances, ceremonial pieces, and the like changed hands as part of the peace settlement.
Dr. Walter Soboloff. Here now a selection from Peter LaFarge.
Way up in South Dakota, legislators passed a law to make the Indian reservation state land forevermore. Cattle barons gave the order, for they control the vote, and no one in the capital would dare to rock the boat. But them Indians got no war whoop anymore, anymore. No, the Indians got no war whoop anymore. It's all right to ravage the defenseless savage, 'cause them Indians got no war whoop anymore. Now there was one way to stop this with 14,000 names, but the white men were not frightened like Custer of ill fame. They never thought the Indians would organize. They never have, they never will. It'll be a great surprise, 'cause the Indians got no war whoop anymore, anymore. No, the Indians got no war whoop anymore. It's all right to ravage the defenseless savage, 'cause them Indians got no war whoop anymore. The Indians fought with pens and pencils, just 14,000 strong. They threw it into referendum, and it didn't take them long. The Indians took the saddle as they did in days of yore. Now they're frightened at the capital, 'cause the Indians won the war. Oh, the Indians got no war whoop anymore, anymore. No, the Indians got no war whoop anymore. It's all right to ravage the defenseless savage, 'cause them Indians got no war whoop anymore. Now in every Indian nation and in every Indian tribe, Indian hearts stand up to sing of South Dakota's pride. All across America, the red man has found out, as long as he is organized, the thieves are all in rout. Oh, the Indians got no war whoop anymore. We checked with the Harvard Department of Anthropology, and they told us Indians got no war whoop anymore. It's all right to ravage the defenseless savage, 'cause them Indians got no war whoop anymore.
What was that?
Potlatch, produced in the studios of KUAC in College in cooperation with KTOO Juneau, KOTZ Kotzebue, and KYUK Bethel, under Title I of the Higher Education Act.